Curie. I run the Insect Diagnostic Lab for the Department of Entomology, and I am the host for today. And so, since it's officially 9:30, we will start the conference, and we'll start with our county roll call. Anybody from the southeast on?
Hey, Phil, it's Chrissy from Walworth County.
Morning. How about up in the northeast?
Tim from Winnebago.
Okay. We got the W's well represented so far. Anybody from the central part of the state?
Melissa from Marquette.
Anybody from the north?
Northwest, cover that. This is Heidi up in St. Croix County.
That will work. And anybody from the western edge? Okay, anybody I missed? Okay, I know I did get a couple emails from folks that said they couldn't join us but had made some comments. So probably best to do county reports. Chrissy, why don't we start with you since you were first on?
All right, good morning, everyone. As far as county reports go, I guess that heat wave that we had last week, grass is looking a little bit poor, but not as bad as last year. Other than that, Phil, I think on my own raspberries, I have spotted Drosophila, but I have yet to catch one. I should have caught one this morning, actually. And other than that, some just little reports coming in, a lot of tree questions still lingering, and that's about all I have.
Okay. Kim, how about you?
Been fairly quiet here. It did warm up, but we did get some rain in the midst of that, so some people got it, some people didn't. It just kind of depended on where you were at. But the calls have been quiet except for the EED calls. Since it's been found here and it went out in the paper, we've been getting calls, but it's mainly, really, the pictures people are sending are just young trees, and what they're seeing is just the formation of the bark, of the more mature bark forming, and there's nothing wrong with the tree. So, but other than that, it's quiet.
Okay, thanks. How about up in Marquette County?
It's been pretty quiet here, too, actually. You saw that sample of the squash bug I sent in. That was really one of the only things that I've had come up the last couple of weeks here. We're still hurting for rain. We haven't really gotten anything for rain, so everybody's kind of been in a tough spot that way.
Okay, and Heidi up in St. Croix?
Yeah, we still have no rain. So pretty much farmers are just putting stuff up with silage. Soybeans and corn are all dead. I haven't had really any calls this week. It's been, like everybody else is saying, really quiet. Diana down in Pierce, I coordinated with her, talked to her, and she put out an article, a press release, saying everybody water your trees. So hopefully the papers will run that this next week, because I'm seeing a lot of young trees that are dying. And it's just like people aren't thinking about watering them. But other than that, not much insect issues because it's so dry.
Okay. Well, as far as what I've seen pop up in the lab, a lot of calls on hawk moths, and in particular, we see this on occasion, the white line sphinx, which is one that will often forage on petunias and other things during the day, which, you know, much of the moths in that family are kind of nocturnal. And so, you know, sometimes people are seeing four or five of them, they mistake them for hummingbirds, and so we see this phenomenon about once every 6-7 years when we get some good populations and the like. So I even saw one in my own backyard last night, so that was kind of fun. This tree thing makes me nervous again. I was so delighted with the high moisture levels because after the drought of last year, you know, what I expect to see is chestnut borer and bronze birch borer and a whole bunch of other insects taking advantage of the stress. And, you know, the moisture levels turned around so quickly that I kind of thought, well, maybe we wouldn't get hit, but now we're back in that fire again. And so that makes me nervous as far as is tree mortality we're going to see in the next 2 or 3 years if this continues and we get such a dry fall. This kind of weather in September also makes me quite concerned about spider mites on conifers because unlike the spider mites on most of our other plants, the conifer spider mites thrive in dry springs and dry falls. They're really not a summer creature. So one would anticipate if we don't get some rains, problems on spruces in particular will start popping up a year or two from now. I'm a little surprised I have not seen box elder bugs yet because they tend to like dry late summers, and we had such a horrendous population last year. But in my poking around out in the field in the last week or so, I really have not seen anything, and it should be starting to cook right now. Have had some flies or calls on cluster flies, which are the ones that invade people's houses, and if people have had a history of those, they should be treating now. And although I was not anticipating much in the way of Asian lady beetles in the southwest part of the state over in Richland County, I've had a couple conversations with some crop consultants who have had little pockets of very high soybean aphid populations, and in those soybean fields were lots of Asian lady beetles. So that one will be interesting to watch forward. They will not start coming in until we get a hard freeze, so we're still probably a ways away from that. But my gut feeling, it's still going to be similar to last year, that it's, you know, nothing like the populations we had experienced, you know, 8-10 years ago, but there still might be some little hot spots, per se, that we might have to worry about. And, yeah, lots of tree stress issues. You see a lot of trees that are scorching and fall coloration, even a lot of ash trees in this area that somewhat surprised me. And I, you know, you equate it to the combination of the drought last year and now getting hammered again this year and the like. So any bug questions?
Hey, Phil, it's Chrissy. I had a call this week, and I just want to make sure I was sharing the right information. A lady had called with a cricket infestation in her basement. And
mm-hmm.
Her home was, like, she says it was built 6 years ago, so she couldn't find any really entrance spots for them, but she had put out some sticky traps, you know, to get them. And anything that I missed there, I kind of just...
Yeah. Well, I think the weakness of most structures is that interface. If there's some exposed concrete from the basement, they're crawling up and getting underneath the siding. It's kind of like going over a wall. And so, you know, there has to be a weak point here. So we would start with vents and other things to make sure they're caulked in. But this doesn't matter if it's ants, mice. There's just a whole ton of things that invade, and it really is worth the effort of getting expanding foam or other things and just getting going around the whole perimeter of the house and get that all tightened up. Because, you know, the crickets are not breeding in. You know they're migrating in. They're crawling around at night, and they're just, they said, falling in. So that would be the first place I would look. Is an access point that isn't very obvious at first, but yet that turns out to really make a big difference.
Okay. Thanks.
Phil, I got a question kind of along the same line. I had a gentleman come in. He has a fairly bad problem with the cellar's fires mm-hmm. in the house. I gave him the fact sheet I could find that described the spiders, and it basically just said knock down their webs is the number one way of trying to keep them controlled.
Well, even I would use the vacuum cleaner and have Adam with that. I mean,
yeah.
I think that is as effective as anything, is getting back in the corners and just reducing their populations. And, you know, spiders don't respond that well to treatments. There are some, the pest control people have some encapsulated formulations and whatnot that tend to work a little bit better, but just to bother you go through, as I said, I normally one or two good vacuumings a year should take care of things.
Okay. That's kind of what I told him. I just wanted to make sure I wasn't sure about the insecticides. So.
Yeah, well, you know, for people who want to do it, when you call a pest control service in, they're going to use the same pyrethroids that you buy at Home Depot, but the formulations are different. So they're using a product called Demand or Suspend that are microencapsulated. And what happens then is the spiders pick that up, or they also use a wettable powder sometimes. So the spiders pick that up much more readily than a liquid spray that dries. Now, people have the option to chase this stuff down on the Internet, you know.
Mm.
That would be one thing. And so when people want to go that direction, what I suggest, you just do a search on Do Your Own Pest Control, and there's three or four sites that will pop up. And they're really very quite informative. And, again, they'll sell the chemicals that the pest control services use, because these are not restricted use. They're just not marketed.
Okay.
And those are some of the better chemicals for fall outside treatments, too. And so that's what the pest control services will use, but then somebody's got to have a sprayer and the like. So, but that would be the option if somebody insisted, but I still think I've got more faith in the vacuum.
Okay. Good to know, because he really didn't want to spray if he didn't have to. So.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, do we have any other specialists on? Okay, well, with that then, really, because this is the wrap-up show, I think what Brian wanted us to discuss is, you know, kind of how things went, and in particular, should we be looking at other directions or other ways of doing stuff? Is there a way we can do things better, maybe a better way of putting it? So does anybody have any feelings?
Well, I participated now for 2 years in these. In the first year, you didn't have the kind of special topics where the specialist came and talked about something, and this year you did. And that was nice. I did enjoy that. I didn't get to hear as many of them as I would have liked. There was a few that got a little long, so I guess that is my only comment, is if the time could just be washed a little bit on some of them. But other than that, I thought it was a good year.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think in some cases we're drawing people in that do not have experience with this, and so I think what they expectations are, you know, they just want to provide a lot of information, and so
yeah.
So I understand that. But other comments?
This is Heidi up in the Northwest, and just from a new person's point of view, it was very helpful just to kind of see what's happening in the other parts of the state so I could kind of keep an eye open for it happening here. So I liked the updates, the specialist availability, that piece of it. And then the special topics definitely were interesting, some more than others, I guess, for me. So I would say overall I'd say it was a positive thing.
This is Lisa from Marquette. I would echo that as well, and just wanted to make the comment that when some of the specialists are talking about the different varieties, for me being a new person, it was helpful to have, you know, like an accompanying PowerPoint or reference that way, so that when they're talking about these different varieties that I'm maybe not familiar with, I can kind of get a visual for it and get to know it a little bit better.
Now, are people finding their master gardeners and other people are making use of the podcasts? I think Brian would probably want to see if it's worth it. I know he puts an awful lot of effort in getting that stuff up.
That I don't know, Phil. I honestly don't know if our master gardeners are using it or not.
This is Chrissy down in Walworth. I usually send the link to the master gardeners each week, and if they choose to watch it, they can. But when their hours come in, I can just do a quick tally to see how many of them actually use it for their continuing education. You know, but I'd be, you know, willing to just touch base with a couple of them to see, you know, who's using it. And from what I understand, some of them do listen to it, and I encourage them to. So I guess from my perspective, I'll need to get a little more follow-up with them to get that answer for you, Phil.
Yeah, well, I would appreciate that. I mean, I even from the specialist standpoint, just hearing what's going on everywhere, I kind of gets us, because, you know, times I think things that are real common, you normally wouldn't call in for, so you just don't have a good handle of really what's going on. And then you would think vice versa, the master gardeners, is that, you know, whether they're taking calls or it'd just be good to get them up to snuff of what kind of things are really happening at a given moment. And so I would think it would be quite valuable. But as I said, I don't know if we've got a good measure on how much people are using.
Is there a way to set up the website so that you know how many people are connecting?
I'll have to check. I think Brian will be following up on that, as I said, again, to see if it's, you know, this has been kind of an evolution of the podcast versus, you know, we used to have hard copy pulled together and whatnot, so.
I do find the hard copies very useful, because for the weeks I miss, I find myself pulling those up and skimming them to see what was reported.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Bill? Yes?
This is Diane in Kenosha. Margaret and I are master gardeners who handle the plant helpline on Fridays, and you're on our agenda every week if we don't have too many calls. We find it very helpful to hear the specialists and also to hear the questions and answers. Many times we get calls that tie in with what you've talked about on a particular day. So we appreciate it.
Okay, that's good to know. And again, I think that's what our hope of this whole thing is to get kind of everybody on board and, again, have people available access-wise for those kind of questions. So I think it works well in the Hort area.
Hi, Phil. Okay. This is Patty.
Hi, Patty.
Oh, hi. I've just been lurking a little bit. I like the new format. I especially like the idea of having the PowerPoints or some sort of handout available online, some visuals. But I agree with the earlier comments that the length of those presentations is sometimes a bit much, and I think it just needs a little bit of extra instruction for our presenters, our speakers, whether they're specialists or outside guests, to give them a little bit better idea of how much time we really have to do this. But I love the extra the extra visuals and the handout pieces that go along with those. And I'm also wondering if there is a way to track those podcasts on the website to know how many people are actually accessing them. I think that we have a way to. I think there's a way to do that.
Yeah. Well, as I said, I'll check with Brian because I that's basically his expertise. So, with it. Okay. Anybody else out there that's got some comments?
It's Chrissy again. I just wanted to comment that I really like the 9:30 start time. Kind of gets me in. I can do a couple things before we get started, and I have really enjoyed the Friday 9:30 start time this year.
Yeah, this is George from Columbia County. I would agree with, I like the special presentations. If they could keep them to 20 minutes or a half hour, would be great. And then the 9:30 time is great because we typically have an Henri Wyss line at 8:30, which goes for about an hour, so I can catch two of them one day. Works really well for me.
Anybody else have comments? Okay, with that, then we'll let everybody get back to the things that need to get done, and do appreciate everybody being involved. We'll pass this on to Brian when he comes back on Monday, and hope you all have a good weekend.